Welcome to PTW Office Hours, where we invite authors, writers, publishing professionals to have casual conversations around craft. Grab your journal, a cup of tea or coffee, and get ready to take notes. This is PTW Office Hours, brought to you by Permission to Write. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of PTW Office Hours. I am really excited to be chatting with someone who not only is a brilliant writer who just released a new book, but also family, which always makes it a little bit more fun. Esteban is an esteemed producer with a long tenure at MTV. He's also the host of Rap Dads, which is a podcast that we'll get into a little bit later. He's just a brilliant, brilliant individual. And so I'm so excited to be talking about this new endeavor. So, S, tell us a little bit about the book, just from your words, first and foremost.
Oh my God. First of all, thank you for having me. Thank you for being so supportive and so awesome. And I've definitely been inspired by you along your journey. I am very much a visual learner, and people make things possible for me. So you are definitely one of those people that inspired me to write this book. The book is called The 10 Dad Commandments, Fatherhood Through the Lens of Hip Hop. And it is very much, a lot of things rolled up in one. It's my contribution to the 50th anniversary of hip hop. As a journalist, as a producer, especially who, you know, eats, sleeps, and lives, hip hop, I definitely wanted to contribute something that would be very unique. During this time, and I didn't want it to be so much of a retrospecty type of thing as much as like, what is an angle that I haven't really seen hit that I am uniquely positioned to contribute to. And obviously, you know, fatherhood has been the thing that I'm almost as popular for as my actual work. So, the book was inspired by Biggie in so many different ways, from the cover to the structure of the 10 Dad Commandments as a take on 10 Crack Commandments, you know, the step-by-step booklet that you can get, to the simplicity of, you know, of the way that I wrote. You know, Biggie, his mass appeal was his subject matter, the aspiration, the luxury, the illustrious, but it was also the simplicity that made it so palatable and acceptable to the audience. And then I also have a little segment within each chapter that's called I Got a Story to Tell, which is another Biggie song. And that is, you know, my way of telling stories that relate to each of the commandments. So that's my book.
I love that. I love a case study, okay? Because sometimes you're like, how do I apply this? So that's dope that you did that. So tell me a little bit about kind of like the onus behind wanting to do a book. So I love this idea of kind of like writing about it like in the moment, right? And I have had the great privilege of seeing the kids grow up from afar now, but a little bit more closely when we were on the East Coast. But kind of being in the thick of it, which is so great. But what kind of made you decide about a book now? Because you could have easily made this a docuseries or something more visual, specifically as someone who is such an esteemed producer and visual artist in a lot of ways. So tell me a little bit about why you made the decision to use the book as the medium to get this message across.
Yeah, so it's funny because, you know, starting out having kids so young, I think I was 22 when I had my first kid, or became a father, you know, which is more accurate. I feel like now my friends are, you know, in their mid to late 30s, and now they're starting to have kids. And everyone's like, man, I wish you wrote a book. I wish it was a book. I wish you had wrote a book on this. Like, you know, I wish I had you in my pocket so that, you know, when I needed some advice, it was there. So the book idea was a seed that has been planted for years and years and years, but I really got inspired to actually write the book because of the pandemic. And, you know, mortality being such at the forefront of my mind, both as an asthmatic who has pre-existing conditions and is very much susceptible to, you know, respiratory infections and things of that nature. But then also, you know, that along with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, you know, that whole police brutality, you know, epidemic and pandemic, you know, being very much back at the forefront of people's consciousness as well. I'm like, God forbid, when my sons become fathers and I'm not here to father them and help them along their journey, you know, everything that I've learned in this on this path, you know, dies with me. So that's why I really was charged to actually sit down and actually start writing and fleshing this book out, because I wanted to make sure that, you know, this is the most important role I've ever played in my life. This is the most important job I've ever had in my life. And I love it so much, and I'm so appreciative of what it's done for me. I want to make sure that my sons had me when they needed me for that part of their lives.
That's so dope, because one, I feel like we don't think enough about how, when we create a book, how tangible that is, how like the fact of our art in a lot of ways will outlive us, essentially. And so I think kind of approaching it with that kind of at the forefront to say, like, what can I leave people with, is such a great way of going into it. And then also, like, this thought around, there's no manual for parenthood, right? Right. And you're talking about, like, it being one of the most important jobs you had, and there's no training for it, right? So I think it's so important kind of being able to explore that and really give people something to look forward to and kind of, like, flip through it. And I think making it really digestible by kind of having this framework of, like, the 10 commandments, you know, in a lot more productive of a way than Biggie.
Right, right.
Crack, but it's great to see that flip. So what do you feel like was one of the most challenging parts about really approaching this? You know, so much of our audience here at Permission to Write is they're really writers themselves, right? So getting a little bit into the nuts and bolts of, like, what it takes to do something like this, what do you feel was most challenging for you in this process?
For me, it was kind of taking all of the things that are, you know, fatherhood, and then applying them in 10 commandments. You know what I mean? Like, I really wanted to make this book something that if you aren't a father yet, you're expecting, you can grab this book. Or if you're a father of, you know, an adult, you can grab this book. Like, I wanted to make sure that it was a wide range of parenting, because, you know, that cycle of, you know, parenting a toddler is different from a tween, different from a teen, different from a young adult, different from an adult. But I felt like there were principles that could apply to all of them. And so that was kind of the hardest thing. I went through different rounds of the commandments, and I'm blessed to have an amazing tribe of fathers that I bounce things off of. So, you know, I did the first outline and I sent it to like 10 of my dad tribe. And they ripped it and they were like, these are, you know, these can be combined into the same thing, and you're missing this and you're missing this. And then I kind of readjusted and I sent it back, and they were like, okay, now move this here and this should go here. So like it was kind of like a group effort just to get the commandments together. And once we kind of settled on the order and what they are, then I was able to dive in. But that to me took some time.
People don't think a lot about the fact that books really are a collaborative effort. So you had this great dad tribe that was really helping direct you, but a lot of us have editors, we have beta readers, we have those first people that are helping you work through chapters. Shout out to partners and spouses, right? Because mm-hmm. they're often like, you know, I can remember coming to Dilemma in the middle of sessions and being like, so what do you think about this? And what if this happens, you know, and trying to bounce those things off. And so I think, like, oftentimes we say it all the time here, like, writing seems like this solitary sport, but you need community. Like, it's only you and the laptop or the pen and the paper, but it takes so many other people, especially when you're looking at an undertaking like a book, to kind of bring that thing to life.
Absolutely. And I wanted this to be for the community. Like, this, as much as it's for me and my sons, I wanted to make sure, I know that I don't have, I'm not the godfather of, you know, fatherhood. Like, I don't have it all together, you know, so I definitely wanted, you know, a counsel to help me really make sure that they protected my blind spots so that my kids and whoever read this book was definitely well prepared.
So in that same vein of like one of the biggest challenges, what do you feel like has so far been so rewarding? Because the book has only been available since May 15th. We'll make sure y'all all have the links and all that good stuff to find it and be able to gift it to the wonderful like fathers in your life and stuff like that.
For sure.
But what do you feel like what has been one of your favorite parts so far?
I mean, really, it's just been the response. Like, you know, having people that I don't know DMing me, commenting on posts that I posted about the book, you know, that has been unreal. Like even people screenshotting text messages in like men's like threads, and they're like sending me screenshots of you know what guys are like. Yo, I just read this part. You know, I never even thought of this. You know, I'm going to fix this, or I'm going to adjust this, or I'm going to try this. Like just those, you know, that. I've never seen the community talking about fatherhood, you know, in this way. You know what I mean? I feel like there are amazing men's groups and fatherhood meetup type of groups. But I feel like this book, because of the hip hop aspect of it, is tapping into people who wouldn't necessarily kind of find themselves in those groups. So the fact that, you know, this is something that men are sharing with each other and almost like reading along and chopping it up about the different pieces, that's amazing to me. Like, I'm over the moon whenever I get like a DM or something. Yeah, that's been my favorite part for sure.
Well, I feel like, so to go a little bit off, because something you said is making me think about it, you know, what... Has there been anything surprising about like having your own offering? Because we both come from like musical backgrounds for like our full-time work essentially. And so where I thought I had an idea of what it's like to put an album out, because I'm like, I'm around artists all the time and blah, blah, blah. I was actually really surprised at how vulnerable I felt putting a book out and kind of like sitting now in that artist seat. And even for instance, like this, you out here on a promo run. Listen, S is showing up to us. He was just on Sway, okay? Like, pardon us, you know? He's just on Sway in the morning. So like, what if anything has been like maybe unexpected or just interesting about like that process of now like having to promo yourself, I think specifically as like a producer, and like you've done hosting and on-screen stuff. But I don't know, has this been like a little bit of a different type of vulnerability for you?
1,000%. It's been a wild journey, just the promo element. And I feel you in the sense, like, I definitely feel like a rapper. Like, I definitely feel like I dropped the album. This is my baby, my first body of work, my debut album. You got your whole life to make that first joint. This is my classic offering. And sitting down across from people who may not be from our culture or our community, and having them ask me like, what does fatherhood and hip hop even have to do with each other? And me having to have those types of conversations, and people would literally say to me, it was like, well, when you think of hip hop, you don't think of fatherhood. And it's like, no, you don't think of fatherhood. But here are all of the lineage of reasons why these two, you know, things have been connected since their inception. But, you know, the narrative hasn't always painted us in the image that we actually are. You know what I mean? So that has definitely been very interesting. And I am, you know, and my wife would say arrogant, but I am very confident in myself, in my writing, in my talent. You know, when I do, you know, read some comments, you know, in different threads, and especially on Sway's comments about like some of the stuff that I've said about discipline, you know, and I don't beat my sons, or, you know, people like that. Well, I don't agree. It's tried and true. And, people have been whipping kids forever, and that's not, I don't agree with this dude, and blah, blah. You know, I'm cool with that. Like, you know, I'm not taken back. I'm not offended, because again, like, every kid is different. Every father is different. That's just the path that I chose. But even that has been kind of low-key entertaining to see anyone have any type of reaction. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Because, I mean, listen, if the people are talking, that matters, you know? You really start to see that. You know, I love that you talk about just some of the concepts in the book, because you mentioned, like, that it's not necessarily, like, the step-by-step guide, you know? It's one person sharing their experience through this great lens of hip-hop. But, like, I guess, do you feel like, is there one particular commandment that if you're like, if you don't get any of it, this is the most important? Or if that's too hard to do, because I get it, they might be like babies, you know, it's hard to choose your favorite. But if not that, then is there like, do you feel like there's one key nugget that is like, look, if you read this and you don't get nothing but this, this is the most important thing?
For me, it's commandment number one, the chapter one. I start with it. Know your role. What is a father? And I feel like, you know, you cannot fulfill a role that hasn't been defined. So let me help you understand what this role entails. Let me dispel some of the myths that you may think and feel about, you know, preconceived notions going into this. Nah, this is what a father is. Here are the different parenting styles. Choose your style. Some styles apply in different parts, you know, of development. You know, every kid is different. I'm really like in that chapter, I'm really laying out the role and what to expect. So if you just stop at chapter one, you're a better father than you were before you picked up the book, because I'm, you know, helping you get a real scope of the grasp of that role.
And it's so powerful, because I literally was recently watching the Dear Mama documentary about Afeni and Tupac Shakur on Hulu. And, you know, you realize how much the absence, right, of the father really played into, like, particularly Tupac's story. Not saying everybody's story will be the same, but I just felt like, as much as I was watching, thinking how powerful and just, like, I don't know, like, influential, like, Afeni was in his life.
Yes.
Just how much of, like, I saw a lot of anger, essentially, in Tupac, right? And, like, how much of that anger was really rooted in the absence of a father. Right. And so I think, like, this idea around, like, what is that even supposed to mean is, like, really important. I even have friends who didn't grow up with dads who are trying to define it for themselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think it's so important to kind of have some guidance and being able to take that foundation and kind of define it for yourself.
For sure. And everyone's going to be different. Everyone's style is different. Everyone approaches different. There's no one way to do this. So it's definitely tailored to your strengths and tailored to your child.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this kind of idea around, like, rap and hip hop and how it leans into fatherhood, because we know you host a podcast called Rap Dads.
Uh-huh.
And, like, what do you feel like is special, or, like, some of the unique parts of looking at fatherhood through this specific lens?
Yeah, I mean, for me, hip hop has been almost like a big brother to me. It has exposed me and put things in my consciousness, you know, early on, that have molded my view of life. You know, for example, you know, mental health is very much a big button, hot button topic now. But my mind's playing tricks on me by the Ghetto Boys. You know what I'm saying? That planted that seed in my mind in what, 92 or something, you know, somewhere around there. You know, and there's been a bunch of different, you know, police brutality, you know, 911 is a joke. Those types of things those themes have always shined through in hip hop. Hip hop has always been the voice of the people telling us, you know, what we should be on the lookout for. And in fatherhood, it's been the same. And we get amazing, you know, songs. You know, I'll specifically just talk about Biggie. Biggie's breakout hit Juicy, the first record, before he raps a bar, he said, "This album is dedicated to the people who would call the cops on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter." Sky's the Limit, another, you know, iconic Biggie record. He talks about, "Get my daughter this college plan so she don't need no man." Like, you know, Big was always sprinkling in you know, those little fatherhood gems. And there's been song after song after song, you know, about that. You know, Nas has, you know, To My Brothers with Daughters, and he talks about, you know, his journey as a father and how this role has, you know, impacted him and made a man out of him. And then in their actions also, like, you know, Nas gave his daughter Destiny executive producer credit on Stillmatic. And so she will have residuals for the rest of her life off of his work. You know what I mean? Like, those are, we saw Rev Run use his show to catapult all of his family's career. You know what I mean? Like, we still talking about Angela Simmons right now, and we would have never known anything about her. Diggy is killing it on Grown-ish and, you know, in music and other things. But he utilized his platform not to glorify him as Rev Run and, you know, Run DMC and all that, but to shine light on his family and show their talents. So we've always had these examples of, you know, what fatherhood looks like, regardless of what the narrative actually is. And so I definitely noticed those. And then also in my journey speaking as a journalist, whenever I sit down with an artist, I like to break the ice before the interview starts. And so that usually means me pulling things from their current, you know, life that we can kind of relate on. And fatherhood, obviously, is one of those things. And they always light up when we talk about that subject. It's such a great icebreaker because it catches you off guard, but it's something that you're so passionate and excited about because it's so, you know, very much new in your life at the time. And me being a seasoned vet, you know, I have a lot of insight, you know, on the subject. And it's always, you know, it always kind of has been a recurring theme throughout hip hop in my experience. So I just wanted to make sure that I could share that with the world.
And what a unique opportunity where, like, specifically when we talk about music, men get in this great opportunity to, like, raise their families in completely different environments than they might have grown up in, you know? Yes. And I know it's probably like similar for you too. What has been, I feel like a lot of rap dads talk about like, oh man, I'm between wanting to make the best life for my kids, but also feeling like they don't have enough edge. So what for you maybe has been like, has that been a shared experience for you as well? One, just, I wanted to highlight that opportunity. Like, it's just great to see
so great
rap dads be able to do that for their families. But has that also been a challenge for you in your journey?
It was. It was early on. Like, you know, how am I going to safely simulate the hood and all of the experiences and gems and, you know, knowledge that it gives you without having them in those environments? And so I spent, you know, some time doing that. And what I found out, honestly, was, and my father, you know, had this brilliant idea to take my sons to the hood to play ball. So they played basketball in the projects in Jersey City. And that's where they got very familiar with that energy, with some of those characters, you know, whatever. But, you know, very much in a very safe, you know, way and environment. But in my, you know, fatherhood, you know, quest for knowledge, I remember watching a Jay-Z interview with the New York Times. And he was talking specifically about this. And he was like, it's a waste of our time and effort to prepare our children for an environment they will never experience. Like, we've created a better life for them. Why are we trying to prepare them for the hood? They never going to experience it. And I was like, yo, that's right. It's brilliant. You're absolutely right. My sons will never be in West Philly. They'll never have to take SEPTA unless they want to. And my son is at Drexel now, so he's on SEPTA all the time. And it's hilarious to me. But, you know, I don't have to prepare them for it because where they're going, they need to be forging ahead. They don't need to be worried about what's behind them. I'm never going to fail them to the point where we all back in the hood and they'll never have to be concerned about that.
I love it. It's like sans the trauma, like
yes.
all the sensibility, but without the trauma. Because, you know, I think you speak to an interesting point where most of us who grew up in urban environments, right, and at varying levels, because all of growing up in an urban environment is not the same either, which people tend
very
to not
true.
Understand, right?
You
know, you do tend to feel like it gave you something, like it gave you perspective or just like whatever, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the only way to be able to create those life lessons for your kids. And so I just love that specific to hip hop, because we're talking about people who really have made it from the bottom of the bottom to
right.
the top of the top. And like, to your point, Jay also said, like, what do you think? I worked this hard to stay the same, right? So it's
hello.
Like, we have to, you know, make these opportunities for ourselves to just keep elevating and loving being able to see generationally, like you said, just ascending that and never having to have that experience, which is so great. So tell me a little bit about like the nitty gritty, right? Because we have such a wide array of writers who are really trying to figure things out for themselves too. And so if I'm not mistaken, this is an indie publishing effort, right?
Yes.
So I just wanted to speak a little bit to that, because it's really important to us here at Permission to Write to always talk about indie publishing versus traditional publishing, mm-hmm. and not that one is better than the other, but that it's a decision. Right. And I think we've really come a long way when it comes to that. We've been provided, like, it's the same thing like with music, right? Like, there was a time in music where it was crazy to be an indie. People were like, what you mean you independent? You need a label, you know? And so I think much the same, publishing has progressed slower, I would say, but has progressed in the same way, where it's like, it's not about one being better than the other. It's about what you want to choose. So tell me a little bit about that decision of what made you decide to go that route, and what has that process been like for you?
For sure. I mean, for me, it's been amazing. And I chose to go this route because I don't like people telling me what to do. Primarily, that's where I am. I'm 20 years deep in my career, and I rarely get told what to do now with $6.5 million budgets with television shows. So you're not going to tell me how to write a book about fatherhood through the lens of hip hop. Like, it got to be a certain amount of words. And, you know, we should get this person to write this part of it. And, you know, would you like a ghostwriter to help out? And, you know, you're using slang words, and maybe that will, you know, not resonate with certain. I don't want to hear none of that. Like, I wanted to write the book that I wanted to write. I wanted it to very much be in my voice, which it really is. And, you know, I feel like I have reach enough in terms of, you know, friends and relationships that, you know, I mean, what indie rapper is getting on Sway in the Morning? You know what I'm saying? Like, I can, you know, I can do those types of things with my friends who believe in me, believe in the message, you know me, you know the father I am, know my sons. And, you know, I feel like I had enough reach that I could do this on my own. And I also, you know, found an amazing editor. Shout out to, you know, my brother Jason J. Insight, who is a longtime hip hop journalist, who is a father, who definitely spoke my language and, you know, definitely knew, you know, what I wanted to keep. And he definitely fine-tuned and made sure that this was a easy read and an eloquent book, but he didn't take any of my flavor out of it. You know, so I appreciated, you know, the work, him challenging me, where's this, you know, where's the source for this? You know, how did you do this? Are we using rap lyrics? Or are we not? Here's an article on rap lyrics, and your ass might get sued. You might want to not put these in there. You know what I mean? Like, you know, all of these different things. And he, you know, he's edited books, you know, professionally. So he definitely guided me along the way so that this wasn't just, you know, some ugly blog post that I turned into a book. This was a book, you know, through and through. So it was indie for me. I'm a rebel. I don't want you telling me nothing. I'm too old for you to be telling me what to do.
I love that. One, just because there's so many parallels in that, you know, I've also been working in music for a while, not quite as long as 20 years. However, it was this idea of like feeling very established as a professional in my full-time work, but then being a debut author who had also self-published two books, by the way, right? So it's like, you know, it's just kind of like an interesting space, being more on a traditional publisher. But I think you just speak to so many important points that I'm always trying to get writers to understand, right? So yeah, it is that thing of you are a bit more of the master of your own fate. I would say that even in traditional publishing, listen, there's a lot of places where you can stand your ground. I just think you get a lot more voices probably, in your head, but you speak to something so important, which is one, having the right personnel, right? So you talked about working with an editor, very important, whether you're going to do indie publishing or whether you're going to be traditionally, but you need someone else who kind of knows how to really drive things home, who can really like look at things from a subjective point of view. And then, like you said too, like be it understanding like what you want people to tell you or not. I had someone tell me recently, they were like, in one of my writing groups, they were kind of like, well, you know, what if I don't want to change anything? And I was like, okay, well, then that means you need to self-publish the book because, you know, you're going to get, you know, a lot of feedback in a different right. way mm-hmm. when you kind of go this traditional route. And then lastly, you speak to community, tribe, network, right? But I want to highlight something that I imagine those relationships have taken you years to create, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you know, my thing has always been throughout my life and my career, which is why I have had the career that I've had, is I have never been afraid to add value to other people, even if it doesn't mean anything will come back to me. I'm definitely a firm believer in karma, and that what you put into the lives of others comes back into your own. So I've been adding value to a lot of these relationships for a decade or more. And then, so when my ask or when I reach out and say, hey, I did this, you know, people like you are like, hey, awesome. I can help you with this. And, let's do this. And so, you know, that it's been years and years and years of me just helping people achieve where they want to go. And now that I have an offering, that's something that is mine and it belongs to me and it's precious and it's important to me, people are like, okay, let's show up.
Yeah. I just think we gloss over that too much. I think especially in kind of like, you know, and we're a part of it too. Kind of we're like the beginning of the microwave generation, but now people want it even faster. Mm-hmm. And I think like, I just felt, I don't know, maybe a little like robbed at first when I realized like, oh, people always told me about networking, but they never told me the relationships would take 15 years to make sense of. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I just remember like being like, man, like I was just going to events thinking like meeting this one person was going to change my life. And sometimes that does happen, right? But right. for the most part, it's years and years and years of cultivating relationships, mm-hmm. like you said, with no intended right. end, quite right. frankly. You're just kind of getting mm-hmm. to know people and having conversations, adding value where you can.
Right.
But then, like, there comes this point where it clicks, right? And, like, something makes sense. But they don't really tell you that when people are giving advice around networking. They're yeah. like, network, network, go to the events. And it's like, yeah, but also like figure out how to still be talking to these people 10 years later.
Yeah, which is yeah, yeah. That's a great point.
The hard part.
That's a great point, yeah.
Which is the hard part. But I love it. So, you know, I feel like everybody's talking about the 50th anniversary of hip hop, mm-hmm. right? Like that is just like the hot topic. And everybody's trying to figure out what they're going to do. Right. But what do you feel like this 50th anniversary means to you? I mean, this started as a project kind of in the pandemic and is really manifested within this 50th year. So what does that kind of personally really, how does that personally resonate with you?
I mean, I'm shocked like that it's been 50 years because every day it still feels so fresh to me. You know, obviously we've had eras and we've had, you know, generations, you know, at this point, but I mean, hip hop is so much a part of my DNA, a part of who I am. Like I live off of hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, so for me to see it celebrated 50 years, to see other people start to, you know, gravitate toward it, and the stories that are being told because it's been 50 years, and you know, the retrospects, you know, that you know, all of these different elements, and the gallery showings, and like all of these different things that are popping up, I'm in heaven. Like, I am such a hip hop nerd. I am such a stan for hip hop. I love it in all of its shapes and forms. I even love the shiny suit era, and I even love the mumble rap era. I just love that it's so it's flourishing so much. Like, you know, when I was at the starting my career, hip hop was the most dominant music on planet Earth. And since it's kind of started to fizzle, not fizzle out, but it definitely has lost the top spot in the past year or two. But the musics that replaced it are derivatives of hip hop. Like, you know, Latin trap, as huge as it is, it's called Latin trap. And that trap is from us. You know what I mean? So I just love to see it expand the globe and other people. And, you know, obviously, when you think of K-pop, you can't have a K-pop group without rappers in it. Like, it just doesn't exist. You know what I mean? And even those rappers in these K-pop groups have such an affinity and adoration and, you know, appreciation for hip hop. Like, I just love how it has blossomed. And, you know, I'm excited to celebrate it. I celebrate hip hop every day of my life anyway, but, especially this year, this has definitely been one of my favorite years to just watch the docs and watch the TV shows and the specials and see, you know, oh, this award show, it better have a 50th montage or, you know, medley or something. Like, y'all better represent. So it's been fun, man, for me, for sure.
I get that. It meant so much to me to see Jazzy Jeff on the Grammy stage, knowing that Jazzy Jeff and Will Smith boycotted the first rap Grammy. And just to have that like full circle moment, not only for the Academy to have the wherewithal to ask, but for him to say yes.
Yes.
And that just to me was like, oh, that's such a great moment. And, you know, I talked the other day about how I went from listening to Freddie Gibbs album to like Tupac to like cracking open like Curtis Sittenfield's like romantic comedy, like a book. And I was like, this is what it's like all about. Like, you know, I'm like constantly using rap lyrics and stuff for things with permission to write, but I'm like, this is the lens from which I see the world. And I love kind of this convergence and collaboration around like literature and hip hop, right? And like yours being like the very on the nose collaboration of that. But I feel like we have an ability to bring that into everything we do, because hip hop is not just music, but because sometimes I feel like I'm like, I don't even know all the hip hop. Like, I feel like I was a little young when like Biggie and Pac were hot. Like, I felt like a little young to like really consume the music, like right, in the same way. But like, it's my flavor. It's like how I come to everything, because hip hop is not just the music. It's the clothes. It's the attitude.
Yes.
It's the graffiti. Like, the fact that it's like really this culture that surrounds really the musical moment. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, man. I was blessed to have 20-year-old parents when I was born. So they gave me all the hip hop with no censorship. I got it all. And it was stuff. And it's funny because I've listened to some of the albums that I grew up listening to and I knew word for word and I was rapping with them. And now I'm 40 and I listen to them. I was like, yo, I was saying these words. Like, what? What is wrong with my parents? But, you know, I love them for you know, just giving it to me raw, because it had such an impact on me. It's crazy.
You know what's funny about that? I asked my parents why they weren't big hip-hop heads, because it was very strange to me, actually, that where hip-hop was having its ascension, my parents were in their 20s, too, which, so it was odd to me. Neither one of them really gravitated towards hip-hop. They were big R&B fans, okay, which is why I'm still like, you know, such a huge R&B fan.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it was so interesting to me that I literally had that. I had to like ask my mom. I was like, so why y'all never get into hip hop? Like, what happened there? You know,
yo.
How did it miss y'all?
For real. And Philly was, and West Philly specifically, was such a hotbed for hip hop. I mean, Schoolie D was invented gangster rap. Gangster rap was invented in West Philly. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Will Smith, the Steady B. Like, there was so much great hip hop in our neighborhood. Like, you know, then we get into EST and, you know, all of these other rappers that were, you know, early on the rise. But like, Philly was such a hotbed for hip hop, you know, during that time in the early 80s and beyond. So, yeah, man, like.
Well, they were shoe-wopping and doo-wopping. They weren't quite fighting the power. but I guess, like, speaking along that lens, you know, I always think about this kind of connection between, like, hip-hop and jazz and, like, poetry more specifically, you know, as, like, also a literary art form, you know? Yes. So how has that connection really happened for you? Like, how do you really equate those things together for yourself? Kind of like, did you make those connections early on? And how have like the other art forms kind of influenced you as a creative in general?
For sure. I mean, I knew very, very early on without any kind of prompting that rap was poetry and that hip hop was jazz. My grandfather is a jazz like aficionado. Like, his record collection is ridiculous. And I remember that I would go join him on the stoop while he was listening to WDAS or other jazz, you know, channels, and just like gone. His, you know, he was just like swaying his head. He was gone, you know, moving his fingers like the pianos or trumpet. Like, I understood that rhythm very early. And then, you know, I would, you know, be with my dad, and my dad would be listening to hip hop, and you would hear those horns, especially in like Public Enemy and things like that. Those horns would be very, you know, prevalent. And for him, it was like, you hear what he's saying, you hear what he's talking about, like, you know. And I remember the first record that I ever had was Parents Just Don't Understand, Fresh Prince, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Parents Just Don't Understand. And it was the single. So it had the record, it had the instrumental, and it had the acapella. And so I would listen. It was the only record I had. I would listen to all three versions. And I remembered the delivery of the lyrics and the performative parts of, you know, Will when he was delivering the lyrics. And it immediately was poetry, you know, to me. So I definitely gravitated toward poetry early on in my life, you know, writing it myself. And then a lot of the times when I'm writing, either for television, primarily that's where I write the most, I definitely want to have a poetic energy to it. Like, I want to use words that naturally roll off the tongue together. I want to use words that are very descriptive. Sometimes use words to describe things that you would normally associate with the word. And I learned all of those techniques from poetry, for sure.
I love that Nikki Giovanni has like Thug Life tattooed on here. I'm just like, I'm like, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Come like on. How I hope to really, really age and be like literary and both just a lover of hip hop. So to wrap, before we get into our last kind of segment that we like to do with guests, what would you want to share about the book that you haven't been asked? I feel like I know what it's like to kind of, people all kind of have their questions and what's interesting to them, but sometimes you're like, oh, I wish, you know, I could have shared this particular thing specifically about the book. What haven't you been asked that you would want to share?
Wow, that's a great question. I feel like, honestly, this was the interview that, you know, I was able to share that information. And it's really just about how influential Biggie was in this book. Like, it's one thing to be like a catchy play on a title. And, you know, obviously the book cover is a direct flip of the Ready to Die album cover with my own son, you know, his baby picture in it. But I really took the time to dissect Biggie, Big Papa, you know, that persona, and really use that as a vehicle and as a framework to tell this very important real life information And that was really, you know, the thing that no one ever asked me. No one ever wants to talk about the biggie element of it. You know what I mean? And so I'm happy that I really got to share that, because as short-lived, unfortunately, as his life was, his impact reverberates throughout our lives to this day. I was listening to Jay-Z talk the other day about Big, and he was saying that when Biggie was the king in New York, and he was telling Jay, yo, let's move to Atlanta. And Big was like, I mean, Jay was like, why? You're the king of New York. Like, this is New York City. What the heck you want to go to Atlanta for? And Big was telling him, man, like, Atlanta got a lot of great music there. It's a lot of great energy there. You know, we'll go down there and, you know, be comfortable and spread out, and the whole family can be there. And, you know, economically it makes sense. And this is a man who was 20 something years old, who like just had vision on vision on vision for, you know, his career. You know what I mean? Like, Biggie was an actor. Biggie was on Martin. He was in these different TV shows. There was so much about him that we didn't get to appreciate because his music was so iconic, but we didn't really get to really dive in to it. And so this was also very much an ode to B.I.G. and the legacy, a part of his legacy that we don't really get to honor as much. The father, openly, he was, you know, to his kids, you know, and in his lyrics.
Well, I just feel like what a statement that is about our art, how much it lives past us, because to your point, we're still talking about Biggie this many years later after his 25 years on Earth, mm-hmm. Which is just so impactful. And so I think just really a testament to whatever you're kind of feeling creatively, like to put it out in the world. And so much of our mission behind Permission to Write is folks giving themselves permission to tell the stories that they want to tell, because this is the testament, you know, of how important that is. Not only did his art influence and impact you, now you have this work that will impact and influence not only your sons, but other folks and their kids and for generations to come. So important. So really quickly, before I let you go, we have a segment called The Canon. So, you know, we like to just highlight writers. Today we're going to talk about rappers who really exemplify some of these categories. What it normally just helps people do is just go to check out people, right? So it's literally like when we highlight these different elements about writers or today artists, it's like for folks to go do their research. Okay. Every time I listen to like R&B Money or like watch a docuseries, I'm always down the rabbit hole, you know?
Absolutely.
I literally just put on Tupac the other day just to play after watching the docuseries, because that's just what you do.
Absolutely.
When you really can enjoy art. So I'm going to ask you just to give me three different artists that exemplify these particular areas. So first and foremost, we want you to give us an artist who you really love and admire their online or public persona.
Okay. AJ McQueen.
AJ McQueen, tell me about him. I'm not even familiar.
So AJ McQueen, I believe, is from St. Louis, but somehow was also raised in Houston. I think he was raised between back and forth. And I just love the way the content that he creates. He's very much conscious. He always throws in a line about water in some way and encouraging people to drink water. But he also just, he be dropping gems, and sometimes he just be talking and it sound like a rap record. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he just is so eloquent and he's so fly, and like just the little pauses that he has when he's talking about a subject, and he's barred up. So, and it's dope. It's definitely a vibe of the moment in terms of his music. Being very spiritual, being very, you know, incense and Palo Santo, you know what I mean? Like, he on that wave. He's the next iteration of a common, of a roots, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Henny and Crystals, you know what I'm saying? Type of dude.
I love it because duality is a thing, right? Like that's what Around the Way Curls always says. I like to give credit where it's due, but yeah, it's definitely a thing. So tell me about writing voice. So we normally talk about a writer's writing voice. I think if we're talking about artists, maybe we could talk specifically about tonality and voice that you really love from a rapper. Who would you highlight there?
Oh, man. Immediately, who comes to mind for me, rest in peace, Pop Smoke. I felt like his voice, his presence on a record, like I hadn't heard that since like DMX. And I hear it a lot. Like some of my favorite voices, tones, sounds, textures of voice is very much present in Latin trap and reggaeton. Like they just have that rasp that I love. But when I heard Pop Smoke, and he's Panamanian, so that also kind of gave you that Latin energy. That just that tone, like I could listen to that man talk all day. He was just such a dope MC, such a great presence, and he knew the value of his voice. And so he didn't overly wordy you. He let his voice really stay at the forefront of his delivery. So Pop Smoke for sure.
I don't think we give enough credit to how much voice plays into like rap. You know, like people have great, you know, it's like Ross just has the you know, and you already know it's him. You're already kind of bought in. Like voice is just too important. Like I feel like I could never be a rapper because I just don't have like the good voice. Last one is word choice. So what rapper would you highlight that's just like got the multiple syllable rhymes? Like, well, you know, like whose word choice are you just like, oh, that was dope. That was ill.
I'm going to have to give it to the home team and say Black Thought. Black Thought, who, you know, he just released his book as well. Black Thought is the greatest rapper of all time. And when you talk about word choice, this man is so talented, he can mispronounce a word to make it fit in the rhyme scheme and you accept it. You like, he got that off. You know what I'm saying? Like, Black Thought like bends syllables and combines syllables to fit so that the rhythm is never thrown off. Like, this man is a wordsmith. Like, he's so brilliant. I Black Thought, hands down, like, you know, naturally. I'm like, you know, that's naturally. But you say it so dope. It's naturally now for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, so for him, for sure.
Changing the whole canon. So we love it. So AJ McQueen, Pop Smoke, and Black Thought. There it is. That's Esteban's canon. So make sure you go and check those out.
Sure.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun. I love the kind of convergence of my two worlds, like my love of music and both my love of the written word. So y'all will not have to work hard. We'll make sure that you have all the info of how to grab the book. It'll be on our storefront on Bookshop. It'll be in our newsletter in June, so make sure y'all grab that. And again, just gift it to fathers and all the people in your life that you think will need it. So thanks so much for joining us for this PTW Office Hours.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to PTW Office Hours. We hope you got something out of the conversation. You can follow us on Instagram at Permission to Write, on Twitter at Perm to Write, and stay up to date through our website, permissiontowrite.com. Join our community that works to amplify and cultivate the voices of Black writers and writers of color.